This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Mike Dabusky. Emergency services in Israel now say at least five people are dead after the latest round of missile strikes from Iran. The two countries have been trading fire for 4 days now after a sweeping strike by Israel took out major portions of Iran's nuclear and military infrastructure. Police now have in custody Vance Bolter, the man accused of killing Minnesota State Representative Melissa Hortman and her husband this weekend. Governor Walz thanked law enforcement who spotted Bolter on a trail camera yesterday.
To the law enforcement who stand here and the hundreds who are involved in this, the state of Minnesota owes you a deep debt of gratitude. Thank you. You ran towards the danger and you served the state of Minnesota.
Bolter also wounded State Senator John Hoffman and his wife Yvette during his attack early Saturday. In a statement, the Hoffman family says they're lucky to be alive. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Alan Ritchson has played Reacher for 3 seasons now, and season 4 is currently in production. It's a good gig because there are 29 Reacher books, and each one equals one TV season, which could keep an actor working for quite a while. The role is iconic and based on the books by Lee Child. Ritchson says when he won the role, he was nervous about trying to fill the shoes of Tom Cruise, who played the character in the movies. Ritchson says he was really thrilled when he got the part, but recently said that he was even more excited when he realized the character Reacher in the book eventually has thinning hair. Richson says he erupted in cheers when he read that because there is no pressure now to not go bald, which for a guy can be a challenge over the course of 29 TV seasons. Great show. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Brewers cut the cards. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers head to Chicago to open a series against the Cubs tomorrow night. Yesterday, the Brewers beat the Cardinals 3-2 to win the 4-game series and move up into second place. Did things get testy with St. Louis over the weekend? The Brewers' Trevor McGill.
Tensions were high. Everything surrounding that's happened over the series. So, yeah, that's huge for us. 3 out of 4 and get out of the jam like that.
Rhys Hoskins got beaned. The Cardinals' Wilson Contreras having words with the Brewers' bench. Pat Murphy.
Cardinals Brewers, man, there's always going to be high emotion. The health of the game is that you let players, especially veterans like that, handle what they handle. If we feel like somebody's thrown at us on purpose, the umpires will take care of it.
Girls High School Softball, the Kokona Ghosts, with a 1-0 win over Kenosha Bradford to clinch their 4th state division title in the last 5 years.
I mean, it hasn't quite settled in yet, but it's an amazing feeling. I mean, I wouldn't want to go out any other way, so it's just incredible.
That's senior pitcher Carly Meredith with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Here's the deal. We gotta set ourselves up. See, retirement is the long game. We gotta make moves and make them early. Set up goals. Don't worry about a setback. Just save up and stack up to reach them. Let's put ourselves in the right position. Pre-game to greater things.
Start building your retirement plan at thisispretirement.org. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us next time. We'll talk with Tom Kircher of Wisconsin Watch about the weekend headlines and also check in with Clean Wisconsin on Pollinator Month. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Partly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms possible today. Our high in the mid-80s this afternoon. Tonight, scattered thunderstorms are possible. We could get a quarter inch or more of rain in spots with a low in the mid-60s. Tomorrow, scattered thunderstorms back in the mid-80s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it is 66.
Matt Nair on air.
State Representative Christian Phelps.
As somebody who's in my first term in the legislature, one of the striking things is how seldom the majority party speaks with us. I don't know how many of my colleagues personally feel LGBTQ people don't deserve freedom, but that's kind of irrelevant at the end of the day. They've already spent a number of days attacking trans people because those are days they don't have to spend defending their very unpopular economic agenda.
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Maggie Dawn.
At 4 o'clock, I'm joined by Matt Rothschild. We go deep on book banning in Florida. Did you read Judy Blume? Did you like it? Well, Florida kids won't be able to read it anymore. We discuss.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
That's Chad Brock. Lightning does the work. I don't think we'll see lightning, but we could see rain. Welcome to a Monday morning, everybody. This is the fabulous farm babe, Pam Yonke, on the Midwest Farm Report. Yeah, we've got about a 20% chance of rain in the forecast either this morning or again this afternoon. Hopefully no thunderstorms, but they are a part of the mix. Boy, the heat is going to return to Wisconsin. Daytime highs today, 84 degrees with just a little bit of a breeze. Tomorrow, another slight chance of showers or thunderstorm, putting it right at 30% for Tuesday. Daytime highs tomorrow, 84 degrees. Wednesday, more showers in the forecast, a better chance on Wednesday, 80% probability. Daytime highs on Wednesday, 79. Stumacher Ag Meteorologist joins us in about 15 minutes to give us all the weather details that you're hanging on. I'll tell you what, it's not just farmers paying attention to the weather. County fairs have to pay attention to the weather. They only have a certain number of days to make their event successful, and weather dictates a lot of that success. Stephanie Hoff talks with an insurer that works with county fairs to try to protect their bottom line. And Charity Seebecker also joining us this morning with another dairy farm family happy to host visitors, complete strangers, when it comes to sharing the news of dairy. Stick around for all that. But we start off this morning talking more about county fairs and a theme that you might see at county fairs. You make the difference. And that goes for the fair board members that work year long to put them together. It goes obviously for attendees. It goes for the performers and the kids that are part of county fairs. I talked about it with Jamie Butke, executive secretary of the Wisconsin Fair Association. The You Make the Difference theme comes from a national effort to get more people involved as volunteers. She explains how they were inspired.
I met Ian Hill. He's an award-winning humanitarian and globally recognized community development expert. And I met him at a conference that I had gone to. And there was something about what Ian was teaching us about. Where are you getting your volunteers? How are you doing board burnout? And we really need to pivot since we've had the pandemic. Like, volunteers don't just, or, you know, volunteer like they used to, type of thing. And he hit a chord with me. Him and I had a great conversation about there's some things I think that have to change in our fair industry. And he came and he spoke at our convention, did several workshops. Our fairs took to him. And so did a company called fairs.com, and they said, we want to be part of it. And they sponsored the You Make the Difference initiative, which started out as I want you to come to convention. He was going to come to district meetings and teach our fair board members different tools to use. Turned into a national movement. They have awarded $1,000 grants to different states, and I think they're up to 10 states that have been awarded it. Wisconsin was fortunate enough to receive the first. And so we did our spring district meetings, totally changed. We had 4 days of just in-depth, like, break apart what you're doing. Where are you getting that next person? How are you asking for money? Is your community involved? And that's the big thing. Fairs are such an important part of the community, and we often forget to sell ourselves about that. So he just took us on a whole different approach of how we are making sure the community is truly aware of what we bring to the game. And then the best part for us is he's going to wrap up with us again in January, be our keynote speaker, and follow up with the things that he's learned by going to all these other states. And so he's hoping in the next 2 years that he gets to several more states, but it's pretty impressive that there's 10 states that are already on board following this movement.
Again, Jamie Butke along with us, executive director of the Wisconsin Association of Fairs. That You Make the Difference initiative impacted a lot of Wisconsin fairs as well, Jamie, not just the energy level, but tell them how the grants are turning into mobility on fair for fairs this year.
Yeah, so this is fantastic. So the International Association of Fairs and Expositions, IAFE, held an initiative to do an economic impact study, and it just led in line with all of the You Make the Difference tour, because you need to know what your economic impact is to your community as well. So one of the things that the WAF board decided was we want every fair to participate in this Wisconsin, this survey. It'll give Wisconsin a better edge on all of the data that we have, because we are an important part of to all communities, the education that we provide and so forth. We need to let them know the impact that we made. All 74 fairs of ours completed the information needed for the survey, and we turned around and offered a grant option for all of our fairs. We gave them a $1,000 grant. And they all submitted that so that they have the option to contact IFE. And if they want to purchase an economic impact study just on their fair, they could do that for $1,500. And we're, you know, covering the majority of the costs if they want to. And if not, then use it to update something else on your fairgrounds that can help you show what the economic impact is.
Yeah, that is fantastic. And again, you're hoping anybody that was involved in that survey process and getting that data will have it before the end of 2025.
Absolutely. And we're just looking forward to, like, where does that help us in the future? And it'll be exciting to show how much of an impact fairs have throughout Wisconsin.
So, Jamie, let's talk about that. You know, we really worried about how fairs were going to survive, rebound, and thrive again after the pandemic. In 2025, give us a look at the status of our Wisconsin fairs, the challenges they face, maybe the opportunities that they've since discovered.
So I think the fairs are always trying to find another way to showcase ag education. And as much as that used to be the thing that fairs always said, well, yeah, we're just what provides it. No, they are getting so creative with their educational ag tents, ag venture tents, you name it. And they're really trying to create an environment that people come to the fair and aren't really even realizing that they're learning, which is probably the greatest part as well. So fairs, I think, are doing a really great job of that. Yes, they always want to, there's a need for infrastructures to be updated throughout our state. And that's one thing we'd love to look through in the future in a different grant process, because there's several neighboring states like North and South Dakota and Michigan and even Minnesota that receive quite a bit of grant options to make their grounds better or keep them up to date or always doing some improvements. So that's something we hope to look at in the future based off of all this economic impact information.
Excellent. Jamie Butke along with us again, the Executive Director, Wisconsin Association of Fairs. Now let's talk a little bit about how fairs are trying to plan for their future. It's always a challenge. You alluded to it earlier, trying to find volunteers, that next generation of volunteers that are going to work this summer to hone their skills for future leadership. But then there's the financial challenges that county fairs can face. And it really can depend on your location, your demographics, how many in the general audience, but it also depends on those financial supporters. Tell me about some movement that you're hoping for as a group down at the state capitol to enliven financial opportunities for fairs.
Yeah, thanks. So we were fortunate in the last budget, we were able to, for our state statute 9323, we were able to change a couple rules in there and raise a cap of funding fairs used to receive. They couldn't receive more than $10,000 in some state aid. And fortunately, we were able to get things through. And this last fairs were able to cap out at $20,000. So that was a huge difference in a lot of our fairs. But one of the other pieces in that language of 9323 is there's a 100-year-old rule in there that talks about gambling and alcohol and immoral character. And it's really a line in there that has no financial ask of our state government, but it's a line that says if you could take that off, that would really allow fairs to explore a lot of other options for generating revenue. I mean, we always want to be able to, you know, say that fairs are where you get that education, that ag component. But we also need to cover the educational component of what all of our youth are doing at our fairs. So this would be, if this change would go through, it would really widen open the doors a ton for different revenue options for our fairs.
So that is one that we'll watch, hopefully, development down at the State House and see where it goes as of this summer. You know, you mentioned about the financial viability of the fairs and that type type thing. Fares in 2025, just like everything else, Jamie, are not an inexpensive opportunity. You know, I was just thinking about it the other day when I passed a semi that was loaded with some of the amusement elements that I'm sure some fair was looking for. Give people a little sense on how competitive it is to put on a good show these days, and maybe as important, how financially challenging it can be.
Yeah, and when you bring up the carnival industry, there's an entirely different part of legislation. It's called the CARE Act and the RIDE Act, and it was one that we were working with through IFE last year, and then we had change of leadership, right? So we're recircling on that one, but it's one that has to do with the workers that can come into the country to work and so forth. And so we're looking to get assistance on that as well, because if the ride companies can't find people who are willing to work, then that's a part of our affairs that, you know, we don't want to see go away. So we're trying to help with that part of legislation as well. But yeah, there's so many things when it comes to food costs and you know, you're bringing entertainment to get people in, you're bringing acts, you know, you're still paying for the prizes that the kids get to exhibit and so forth. So, I mean, I don't think people realize that a lot of fairs pay out, you know, more than $20,000 in premiums to the fairs, those who are bringing in exhibits. That's awesome, but we still have to pay for that. So nothing's getting any cheaper. But I think what fairs are also trying to do as well is to get, whether it's a ride pass that's for a discount, or some of our fairs, really half of our fairs are still free admission, or they might say, hey, we're going to charge you for the car load that comes through. But they also try to find a way to offer you discounts ahead of time if you just plan ahead to make your visits to the fair.
Yep. Much more beyond just the Wisconsin State Fair. Remember, every one of our county and district fairs has their own special flavor. Thank you, Jamie. We'll be catching up with you now. If people want to follow along with the Wisconsin Fair story, can you advise them social media handles they might want to look for, or any other area they can follow some of the action?
Beautiful. We always have updates. Our entertainment schedule for this year is on our website, which is wifairs.com. But if you want to follow the Wisconsin Fairest of the Fairs, all of our social media goes through there. And we are representing, we're recognizing a lot of our volunteers that have won some awards this past year. We'll be updating all the fair dates that are coming so that you can go and see that. So if you go to follow the Wisconsin Fairest of the Fairs on Facebook, you'll get the best information.
Outstanding. Yeah, and she's a busy young lady for sure. Jamie Butler, another busy young lady. She is the executive director, the Wisconsin Fair Association, Association of Fairs, I should say. WIFairs.com, a great place to get started if you're investigating some of those fairs that you'd like to travel to this year. And of course, we'll keep you posted on those legislative developments that could impact fairs downtown. From the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as Ag Meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
A game without a crowd is just a scrimmage. A performance without an audience is just a rehearsal. Without your presence, high school sports and the performing arts aren't possible. Ensure that these essential extracurricular activities continue to enrich the lives of students in Wisconsin. Purchase a ticket to your local high school's game or performance.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Time for the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. Warm weather is finally here, and so is wildfire smoke from Canada. Forecasters say we can expect air quality warnings to come and go and come again with no end in sight as fires blaze out of control across central and western Canada. Environmental advocates say the hazardous smoke blanketing our state just when we want to head outdoors shows no community is safe from the impacts of climate change and should be a wake-up call for policymakers. The EPA is pushing to end its popular Energy Star program that has helped families identify energy-efficient appliances and home energy upgrades for more than 30 years. A group of U.S. senators, including Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin, is calling on the EPA to keep the popular program, saying for every dollar spent on Energy Star, Americans get $350 in savings. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's most pressing environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. News from the Center, WRCE. Jay Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we will recap all the news from over the weekend and wrap it up with audio sorbet and This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Join us.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Yeah, the weekend weather really turned out to be pretty good. We had that classic green reunion, the peony festival, dairy breakfast. But now for anybody that's going to have to be in the outdoors, what, starting today, you've got to suddenly monitor the heat again, huh?
Yeah, it's going to feel summery, Pam, and I'm really not a big fan of the forecast this week. Too many moving parts, and unfortunately, those parts lead to some rain.
Okay, rain or severe weather?
The chance of severe weather, what I'm seeing now, I'd probably say leans more toward localized heavy rain.
Okay. All right. So rainfall reporters be on alert because, like I said, we're going to be at Farm Technology Media Day tomorrow. That's outside. You know, a lot of farmers are trying to do any number of things outside. I get worried when the severe stuff starts popping up.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, there's that concern in summer. And as we look this week, I think a lot of us know a week like today, the heat and humidity starts to build up more today and tomorrow. And, you know, when that happens, that's when things could tend to get a bit more active. That's exactly what's in store for us. We are going to warm up. It's going to become more humid, really get that summer feel in the next day or two. And it all works out for us starting this week with low pressure moving east in the Dakotas, trying to pull a warm front up in South Dakota and Iowa. That low pressure system will push on toward northern Wisconsin. On its leading edge, we do have rain already this morning, just west of Madison. Mauston having a little rain and some of the activity still almost to Sparta and Toma, more so down to the south, down toward Lancaster, Platteville, Dubuque, having some rain this morning. Rain in southeastern Minnesota, northern parts of Iowa. It's not going to hold together and march right across the state. It'll stay where it is for a time, kind of break up. There's more rain north of the low we talked about, and that's North Dakota, southeastern North Dakota. Big line of severe, well, not severe, but more moderate and heavy rains and more activity. We're watching that way off to the west. Well, that low will gradually move on into Wisconsin, and when it pulls a cool front in late Tuesday into Wednesday, that's when even heavy rains will be our bigger possibility at that time, and it still stays pretty warm even after that front, so the summer weather's here for the week. I'll check the forecast right after this.
Helena Agri on the lookout now for pests, for weeds, and for nutrient deficiencies that are holding back yields. Steve Bailey, branch manager for the Monroe Helena Agri location, says plant tissue sampling key.
One thing I applaud Helena on is we build a lot of our plans off of continuous annual results from either tissue samples or soil samples. And that plant is kind of a snapshot in time. When you take that leaf, it tells you what that plant is struggling to utilize or is deficient in. So we've been doing this for many, many years. So we get to start seeing trends. You can follow trends with weather patterns. So you can almost predict where we might land with some of these tissue samples. And this year we're seeing nitrogen. Some of these tissue samples are coming back with a deficiency or slightly low in nitrogen.
Steve Bailey, branch manager for the Monroe location of Helena Agri. Find a location near you. HelenaAgri.com. All right, buddy, let's have some detail on that forecast.
All right. Well, of course, it gets warm and we'll feel a little more humid during the day today. Southeast Wisconsin with rain this morning. It may hold together there. Could spread further east later today. Maybe a isolated shower, something like that. Partly sunny today, even in the far north, close to 80, very upper 70s, 80s in the south, and south winds will be around 5 overnight. call it mostly cloudy, and there is that chance in the night for almost all of us to see a shower, maybe a rumble of thunder, amounting to a big deal. Nighttime lows in the low to mid 60s with south winds at 5 to 10. It's Tuesday. We look for partly sunny skies, a small chance of a shower earlier in the day, a little more likely midday into the afternoon, in fact, and we temperatures will be warming, and most of us will be in the 80s tomorrow with the southwest wind 5 to 10, that warm stickiness around. Tuesday night, still some chance of rain, but it becomes a bit more likely in western and southern Wisconsin Tuesday night and lasts into Wednesday. And that's when we see only upper 70s and 80 in the south. But that's when rain amounts in southern Wisconsin, Pam, Tuesday night, Wednesday, could start pushing the 1 or 2 inch range. Yeah, we'll watch it develop. That's the one to watch.
Oh, I guess. Stu Muck, ag meteorologist with your Compure Financial Outlook on the week. Hang tight. More on the way.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on Civic Media Radio. We now take you to Matt Nair on Air with Wisconsin Farmers Union President Darren Von Rudin on the importance of public radio.
What I wanted to bring up really quick is one of the things you brought up as a discussion point was cuts to public radio and NPR. Darren, do you want to speak on that?
Yeah, you know, it's something that I think affects not only farmers, but rural citizens across the country. You know, I hear more and more people that are listening to the programs that public radio offers and national public radio or TV. You know, how do we keep those programs alive? And a lot of that is through public funding. About half of the funding, or a quarter of the funding, to NPR and public radio comes from private donations. So, you know, it's one of those programs that I listen to a lot when I'm driving down the road with all the windshield time that I have. and it has a lot to do with the news source that's there too. It's an independent news source. It's not viable to one particular promoter. You know, at the end of different newscasts, they'll say that one of their sponsors was actually somebody that they were talking about.
Right.
Yeah. What radio stations do you hear that on? You just don't. And so how do you know who's pushing what button that they can report on and what they can't report on, where public radio and public TV, you know, really gets to the source. And most times if the opposite sides want to be on the stage at the same time, that's what they would much rather do. But we're seeing a lot of pushback from the far right saying that it's not a good news source. Well, if you don't show up and talk about your point, you really can't say that. It's like the local tavern affiliate or customer that complains about politics all the time but never goes and votes.
Right. Yes.
You really don't have a right to complain about it if you're not willing to be on the program.
I'm very, very surprised that you and other agriculture producers in Wisconsin are NPR fans. And I think that helps explain a little bit to me, at least, why they would like to cut funding, because I think they would much prefer that Wisconsin farmers were listening to different kinds of media outlets.
Yeah, and you know, and certainly nowadays with modern technology, and if you are lucky enough to own some of the modern equipment, you can get Sirius Radio and listen to whatever you want. But there's a whole lot of us that are still farming with tractors from the 80s and 90s and still have AM radios on our dials too yet. So having as many news sources as we can is what we prefer.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
News from the Center, WRCE.
ABC News, I'm Mike Dabusky. Emergency services in Israel now say at least 5 people are dead after the latest round of missile strikes from Iran. The two countries have been trading fire for 4 days now after a sweeping strike by Israel took out major portions of Iran's nuclear and military infrastructure. Police now have in custody Vance Bolter, the man accused of killing Minnesota State Representative Melissa Hortman and her husband this weekend. Governor Walz thanked law enforcement who spotted Bolter on a trail camera yesterday.
To the law enforcement who stand here and the hundreds who were involved in this, the state of Minnesota owes you a deep debt of gratitude. Thank you. You ran towards the danger and you served the state of Minnesota.
Bolter also wounded State Senator John Hoffman and his wife Yvette during his attack early Saturday. In a statement, the Hoffman family says they're lucky to be alive. This is ABC News.
The Brewers cut the cards. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers head to Chicago to open a series against the Cubs tomorrow night. Yesterday, the Brewers beat the Cardinals 3-2 to win the four-game series and move up into second place. Did things get testy with St. Louis over the weekend? The Brewers' Trevor McGill.
Tensions were high. Everything surrounding that's happened over the series. So, yeah, that's huge for us. 3 out of 4 and get out of the jam like that.
Rhys Hoskins got beaned. The Cardinals' Wilson Contreras having words with the Brewers' bench. Pat Murphy.
Cardinals Brewers, man, there's always going to be high emotion. The health of the game is that you let players, especially veterans like that, handle what they handle. If we feel like somebody's thrown at us on purpose, the umpires will take care of it.
Girls high school softball, the Kokona Ghosts, with a 1-0 win over Kenosha Bradford to clinch their fourth state division title in the last 5 years.
It hasn't quite settled in yet, but it's an amazing feeling. I wouldn't want to go out any other way, so it's just incredible.
That's senior pitcher Carly Meredith with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
T. Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome nutritionist and dietitian from Wayless MD, Sherry Stoka. Then Phil Krause, owner of the Time Community Theater in Oshkosh, joins the show. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Partly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms possible today. Our high in the mid-80s this afternoon. Tonight, scattered thunderstorms are possible. We could get a quarter inch or more of rain in spots with a low in the mid-60s. Tomorrow, scattered thunderstorms back in the mid-80s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it is 66.
Carmelo Anthony for the Bail Project.
Bad news, you've been arrested. Good news, you're innocent until proven guilty. If you can pay your bail, good news, you go home to wait your trial. If you can't, sorry, you go to jail to wait. But sure, you still presume innocent. But since you can't afford bail, you've lost your freedom. That's not right. And that's why the Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting the in-cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba.
The soap scientists have found a way to incorporate Sydney Sweeney's actual bathwater into the soap. What if she doesn't smell good? I know she's beautiful.
It smells terrible.
What if she stinks? And no one is going to tell her that because she's Sydney Sweeney. Here's an open invitation to Sydney Sweeney. Come by the Nightlight Studios. I'll smell you and let you know if this is a good product.
Maybe drop off,
and give us a few bucks.
Yes.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. Here at Civic Media, we believe radio plays an important role in strengthening our communities by focusing on what is happening here and now. Our broadcast lineup strives to bring you real news and great conversation throughout your day. We now bring you a portion of a recent episode of The Maggie Dawn Show, where Maggie sat down with economist Benga Agyilor, talking about what the impacts will be to rural healthcare with the current budget bill working its way through Washington.
Tell us what's at stake, what's currently baked into the budget reconciliation bill that will directly impact our rural communities and the health care that they can access when it comes to this $880 million in Medicaid cuts that's slated to occur.
What's happening with Medicaid, and the reason why this is such a big deal, is that they're cutting, as you said, it's a massive amount, probably the biggest cut that we've seen in over 40 years, $880 billion. But the way that they're doing the cut is by adding work requirements and other administrative burdens to basically kick people off of Medicaid. If you're not, if you don't have health insurance, then you're not, quote unquote, spending money on health, then that's gonna, cause the quote unquote savings. And so the issue here is that insurance is important to help out with the hospitals. As the impact of these rural hospitals, that their financial viability, a lot of time is based on Medicaid. And so I'll just throw out a few stats. So first of all, nearly half of all births in rural areas are financed by Medicaid. 47% of children are covered by Medicaid. And, one of the reasons why is that when people are using healthcare and they don't have insurance, the hospital still has to take care of them because that's what they do. And so you have all these uncompensated care costs. And just as a comparison, in states that expanded Medicaid, 3% of uncompensated care costs are are for hospitals in states that expanded Medicaid. In states that did not expand Medicaid, it's over 7%. And so you see that now with this cutting the $880 billion and, you know, up to upwards of almost 14 million people becoming uninsured, that's going to have dire impacts for rural hospitals.
So if a woman is having a baby, what is particularly risky about this scale of cuts to Medicaid is that as we move forward, if these cuts are adopted, it will be less likely that that woman will enter a hospital during childbirth with Medicaid. And if she doesn't have Medicaid and doesn't otherwise have health insurance, the hospital, of course, still has to care for her.
You've been listening to a portion of a recent episode of The Maggie Dawn Show, which airs across the Civic Media Radio Network weekdays from 4 to 6 p.m. Find the full broadcast lineup at civicmedia.us/shows.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
A standout big name player.
Challenging. That can be so challenging. How do you protect? Likewise, I'm from weather. Affect your bottom line. You can't control events. How do you make all the weather? Buildings that you sure that those are invested in off when detected. Stephanie, unique inch. Talk about the unions. That insurance quest. Take a look at. Must on the way. That's all. Today is the so today of 16th. I tell you, well, June. What can be on? Let's see. 1960. This day in Hitchcock's The Alfred Psycho film premiered. Oh, is Hopkins and starring Anthony. It's really become a Miles. Some classic. There's on this day back. Premiere 60. Back in 1978, the film. Back in 19. Film Grease. Travolta opened with John. Olivia Newton in 1980. Also on this day, the musical Katie Brothers. Comedy The Blues in Chicago. The of lines thick from all like music. And half of them. Golfer Faye birthday to then. He turned. Bill Mickelson, 5 years younger, turns 55. And now you know today.
Comes to connecting when it comes with the people and consumers behind their full and the story. Dairy farmers of food helping to lead Wisconsin is at the heart of the charge. Our community, their efforts, our educational outreach events, educative campaign reach, and creating dairy farmings that bring fun and mean to life in. I'm Channing Fullways for the Midwest, Brady Seebecker, and joining us, Farm Report. Check in with dairy for this month's Tina Peter Checkoff is director of Wisconsin, missions for Dairy Farms and Communication. Farmers of Wisconsin talk about how she joins us, building trust. These efforts are understanding, deepening some pretty memorable, and creating experiences. Terrible experience.
Wisconsin, so at Dairy Farmers of Tireless App, we are active dairy advocates for in Wisconsin, dairy producers in our industry. And we work through, and oftentimes with the partners and the promotion groups, our local dairy pro level, out at that local location to bring education.
We're still looking forward to many June dairy events celebrating our dairy heritage in Wisconsin, but it also comes at a time when we're pivoting towards county fairs. Yeah, this week, the Elroy Fair in Elroy kicks off the Wisconsin Fair experience. Welcome back on a Monday morning. I am the fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke. This is the Midwest Farm Report. You heard earlier in the show talking with Jamie Butke from the Wisconsin Fair Association on the challenges that our fairs face. Things like recruiting the next generation of volunteers may seem so simple and yet can be so challenging. Likewise, how do you protect your bottom line from weather events? You can't control the weather. How do you make sure that those buildings that you've invested in are protected? Stephanie Hoff going to talk about the unique insurance questions that fairs must take a look at. That's all on the way. So today is the 16th day of June. What can I tell you? Well, let's see. On this day in 1960, Alfred Hitchcock's film Psycho is premiered. Starring Anthony Hopkins and Vera Miles, it's really become a classic. Psycho premieres on this day back in 1960. A couple other classics, though, that premiered on this day. Back in 1978, the film Grease opened with John Travolta, Olivia Newton-John. Also on this day in 1980, the musical comedy The Blues Brothers premiered in Chicago, starring Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi. I'm sure that many of us can still think of lines, phrases, or the like music from all of them. And happy birthday to golfer Phil Mickelson. He turns 55 years young today. And now you know.
When it comes to connecting consumers with the people and the stories behind their food, Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin is helping to lead the charge. At the heart of their efforts are community events, educational outreach, and creative campaigns that bring dairy farming to life in fun and meaningful ways. I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report. And joining us for this month's check-in with Dairy Checkoff is Tina Peterson, the Director of Wisconsin Communications for Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. She joins us to talk about how these efforts are building trust, deepening understanding, and creating some pretty memorable experiences.
So at Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin, we are tireless advocates for our active dairy producers in Wisconsin, and we work through our industry partners and oftentimes with our local dairy promotion groups out at that local level to bring education to consumers. And the goal of that is really to build trust in our dairy farmers, our dairy farming practices, and of course, our award-winning Wisconsin dairy products.
When people come to June Dairy Month events or other summer activities, what kind of experience can they expect? I know from personal experience, they're a lot of fun to do. You know, whether you're getting that delicious breakfast, you're getting to see those animals up close and personal, speaking with those farmers. Or in my community, we do Cowtastic Cowmunity, where we have cow cutouts that we put up throughout the community to help educate people about dairy. But it's a little bit deeper than that, too. You know, there's something deeper about getting to know where your food actually comes from.
Absolutely. So we know the value of people engaging with our dairy farmers and learning about where their food comes from. Just in June alone, for June Dairy Month, we have over 60 community events statewide. Of course, those incorporate our iconic Breakfast on the Farm activities, but also throughout communities, you'll see them celebrating dairy in various forms. And we really work to educate consumers on our dairy industry and what makes Wisconsin America's Dairyland.
Do you find that people are often surprised by what they learn about dairy farming when they're attending some of these events?
Absolutely. So we know we'll have over 100,000 consumers on farm just in June alone. And so we make sure that we have educational materials out there. For example, 99% of our Wisconsin dairy farms are family owned, and 81% of our dairy farmers grow 80 to 100% of their own feed. So, you know, the importance of local is definitely emphasized, but also the care that farmers put into their daily practices of taking care of their animals and their communities.
It's not just obviously caring for the animals, but the environment, and a lot of them are incorporating cover crop practices and sustainability, right?
Absolutely. So we know our Wisconsin dairy farmers have a really long history of caring for their land and water, mostly because these are multi-generational farms, but they also take really great care in making sure they're taking care of their cows and their families and farms and communities. So there's a lot on a farmer's plate, but they are such a vital, important role in their communities. And we encourage consumers to really engage with our dairy farmers, ask them the questions they have front of mind, and then they can support those actual dairy farmers by buying products made from our Wisconsin milk. And that's very easy to do in the store. You can go to any retailer and look for products that have the Proudly Wisconsin cheese or Proudly Wisconsin dairy badge.
And June Dairy Month events are already underway. I know I've got different events on my calendar coming up already that I'm excited for. But why should others be sure to add some of these events?
Hey, got yield? The Wisconsin Soybean Association is excited to announce the 2025 Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. Highlighting the innovative production practices of Wisconsin soybean growers, the Yield Contest celebrates soybean growers across the state and their dedication to improving their operations. Two winners will be selected from four geographical divisions, with additional awards available. Entry forms must be postmarked by August 31st, so don't wait. For more information, visit wisoybean.org.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
Rural Mutual Insurance is a proud sponsor of the Northern Wisconsin State Fair in Chippewa Falls. As a thank you for your support, they're giving away fair tickets. Visit ruralmutual.com/win and enter to win tickets to the Northern Wisconsin State Fair.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
Well, the Dow Jones Industrial Average looks better this morning than it did on Friday. It's up more than 150 points right now, but commodities are mixed. Right now, July corn's down a nickel, December new crop down a nickel, 438. July soybeans are unchanged, November new crop up a penny, right now at 1056. The wheat for July, that's down 8, currently at 535. On Friday, the barrel cheese was down a penny and a half at 183 and a half. 40-pound black cheese was down a quarter of a cent, 183 and three quarters, while AA butter gained 2.5 cents to finish the week at 257 a pound. The July class 3 milk that goes into cheese down 2, 1811. August down a dime, 1868, as we roll into a Monday trade session. Coming up next, we've been talking about the fair season, which is upon us. Elroy Fair getting started this week. Up next, how does a fair protect itself from things like adverse weather? What happens if a pandemic unfolds? What happens if there's a problem with a building or maybe the water that runs to that building? These are things that county fairs and their volunteers have to think about all across the state of Wisconsin. And Stephanie's going to introduce us to a company that does their best to make sure they're providing insurance products for those fairs so they can keep doing business. It's not something you can assume anymore these days. Stephanie Hoff joining us next on a Monday morning. Don't forget, more available at MidwestFarmReport.com right now.
Sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. Tarrant County, Texas County Commissioners approved a new county redistricting map June 3rd, diluting the votes of Black and Hispanic voters. But commissioners claim the gerrymandering was for political, not racial reasons. The map likely eliminates a majority-minority district and has drawn widespread condemnation and a Voting Rights Act lawsuit. County Commissioners and Senior County Official Judge Tim O'Hare brought in the Conservative Public Interest Legal Foundation and the National Republican Redistricting Trust to draw the map, according to reporting by Democracy Docket. Their efforts apparently manipulated the districts to gain another GOP County Commission seat and a 4-to-1 advantage. Analysis by the UCLA Voting Rights Project and Southern Methodist University found the approved map packed District 2 Black and Hispanic voters into District 1, reducing the chance a Black or Hispanic candidate would be elected in District 2. Because the county staggers election cycles for different districts, it also disenfranchised as many as 150,000 voters, heavily Black and Hispanic, who can't vote in their current district's 2026 election and must wait until 2028. Voters sued under the VRA and the 14th and 15th Amendments. The commissioners claimed that they gerrymandered for political advantage, to which the Supreme Court turns a blind eye, and not racial discrimination. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Ken, as I like to call him, my least favorite Martin, chairman of the Democratic National Committee.
The other night I said to myself for the first time, I don't know if I want to do this anymore.
Matt Flynn.
You go into combat and the general goes, I'm afraid. He reminds me of the coach of the Jets back in the 90s. The other team would come on the field and say, boy, they look big. No, I swear to God. And the Jets lost 12 games. I mean, right? You can't have this kind of stuff. Get this guy out of here. Put in Ben Wickler.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station. And on the app. News from the Center, WRCE. Todd Allbaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll talk with Tom Kircher of Wisconsin Watch about the weekend headlines and also check in with Clean Wisconsin on Pollinator Month. Join us.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Is going to be with his family fishing in Minnesota. We wish him the best of luck, but we'll have great stories to share with you, like this one, focused in again on fair activity coming around the state of Wisconsin. I mentioned earlier this week, the Elroy Fair ushers in the county fair season of 2025, but it doesn't come without its challenges. How do you ensure a fair against weather-related events, against building deterioration, against a pandemic? That's the question that we pose, and Stephanie Hoff find some answers.
County fair boards are also watching the weather closely with entertainment and attendance. Depending on good weather, it can be like flipping a coin. That makes insurance a necessity. Robert Holmes is the president of Spectrum Weather and Specialty Insurance. His clients are nationwide, but his roots are in the upper Midwest. Robert grew up in Minnesota and then came to college in Wisconsin. He worked as a weather researcher at UW-Madison for about 8 years before starting his business. His job today is to help fairs protect their bottom line in case of a severe weather event or the countless other things that could go wrong.
Yeah, we've got a lot of different types of insurance products that help kind of ease that financial pain should there be a rainy night, whether it's a complete rainout of an event or just lack of crowd, so you're not making your walk-in revenue, your revenue in the beer garden later, or you know, things like that. Or products that even respond to a complete cancellation, weather or no weather related. It could be a power outage or, you know, any other local emergency, and could occur days before the fair. So we've got a lot of different types of products that we can apply depending on the fair's needs. We have a product for excessive heat index that was developed a few years ago when a lot of our clients were, you know, telling me that it didn't rain at the fair, but it was so hot and humid that, you know, it really kind of crushed their crowd. So that's something we can insure now as well. And, you know, again, depending on what they need, we have lots of different applications. I call them Lego blocks. We can build something that's customized for them and their needs.
It's a big deal to a community. And if you go without a county fair and they can't recoup, that'd be a huge blow.
Yeah, I think we all have to remember that, you know, county fairs are about community, about, you know, FFA and 4-H and bringing, you know, a work ethic from the kids and traditions, family reunion. I mean, there's fairs that the family meets at the fair every year, or they've been showing sheep forever. And it's really about that kind of those kind of values. And in order to do those types of things at fairs, many times, you know, there's some financial needs. And so they, you know, bring in rodeos and things like that to sell some tickets. People can have some fun. They can generate some revenue. And that needs to be protected, because the next year, if they have a bad year, it might be a very minimal fair and or no fair at all.
Was the COVID pandemic one of those big hits that kind of hit everyone?
It was. You know, the fairs were canceled across the country. There was still a few that, depending on the state, that were able to go on, and depending on the activity. But, yeah, COVID really kind of took a hit on a lot of the county fairs around the country.
Did people have pandemic insurance?
There was. You can buy part of the cancellation insurance policy then included some communicable disease cover. And so if you purchased it before the pandemic for your fair in July, if you bought it in January, you had coverage and there were claims. It was the ones that when the phone started ringing in March that they wanted it, that it was no longer available because it's already a pandemic and it's still to this day not available. So you cannot buy coverage for, you know, communicable disease.
What's the price tag look like for some of these fairs? What's the damage one rainy night could do?
So you could have a situation like, you know, maybe you're doing a concert at the fair, and all your costs and everything might be, let's say, $40,000. And between ticket sales and everything else, your goal is to go over that 40 and maybe make $10,000. And then if it's, you know, just a horrible night weather-wise, or, you know, power goes out or something, you're refunding tickets, all that money goes away, you lose all your revenue, but you still have to pay the artists, the people that do the staging, sound and lights, they all still get paid. And so that can be easily a $40,000 or $50,000 loss. If you've got the insurance in place, that loss goes away. And so it's kind of a, you break even on the night and you kind of live to fight another day, versus just, you know, for a lot of fairs, losing $40,000 is a lot of money. But the same can be said for a smaller event, a tractor pull, where maybe they're losing $10,000 or $15,000 to that fair relative to their budget size. It's the same impact.
What's the worst you've seen?
Well, the pandemic certainly created some cancellation issues. I did have a fair 2 years ago in 2023 in South Dakota, where they had a concert one night and they couldn't even set up because it was rolling thunderstorms all day long. So it's unsafe to have people out there in lightning. And so they never were able to open the gate. So they had a claim for that. And then 5 days later, they had another concert and the opening act played and the headliner got one song in, and then the storm came in and literally shut the fairgrounds down. The Midway was shut down the rest of the night, and they had a claim for that. It turned out to be one of the, like he said, my client said, it was their fourth most profitable fair because of the insurance claim. Otherwise, they would have lost money. So, yeah, those two concerts would have put them in the red, losing them without insurance. So, you know, he said, never again will I have a concert without event cancellation insurance.
Have you seen a community rally together after the devastation or anything like that?
Yeah, there was this year in, you know, northwest Iowa in the spring, there was a lot of flooding and summer. So there was actually some fairs whose fairgrounds were impacted. And I've actually talked to, like, some of the artists that were due to play concerts at those fairs. And what they did instead was, you know, they decided to go out and have a fundraiser, you know. And you know, by contract, they still get paid, you know, if there's a flood or not. But in lieu of payment, they said, you know what, let's go out. We'll do a fundraising for the community. We'll get the fairgrounds back on their feet, and then we'll just come around and play again next year. You know, so those kinds of things, you know, kind of warm your heart, you know. And as a company and myself, we always try to give back to the fairs, too, whether it's through auction items at the different associations and things like that. So it's just, you know, for me, it's just a great way of life, how these kids grow from little kids raising animals to, you know, being fair board members, volunteers, and then being grandparents of those same kids. And it's just neat. I love it.
Robert Holmes along with us. He's the president of Spectrum Weather and Specialty Insurance. His background is in weather research, and he's taking that knowledge now to protect fairs from revenue losses due to severe weather events. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Stephanie Hawk.
Can't get enough farm news.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety. CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
Sampling of talking points from the recent World Pork Expo today on Farm to Fork. The following is a public service announcement from Farm to Fork. As you're listening to this program, a dramatic paring down of 12 regional centers for agricultural safety and health is taking place. These centers rely on funding support from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and that agency's budget is being cut by more than 98%. Several of those centers have endorsed my 2025 Public Service Farm Safety and Health campaign, what you're listening to right now. I consider this a loss to the farming community, and while no money is changing hands, a loss to this campaign as well. These centers provide a valuable service to American farmers, their families, and their workers. If you want to make a case for retaining these centers and the services they provide, get in touch with your elected officials in Washington. If enough of you do, there may be a chance to save these services and save the lives and livelihoods of America's farmers. As you might guess, there was plenty of buzz about ag policy, the farm bill, tariffs and trade, and animal health at the recent World Pork Expo, and a bit of optimism as well. Some of it had to do with the political future of California's Proposition 12. Here's Brian Humphreys, CEO of the National Pork Producers Council.
The state of California should not be able to tell producers in Texas or in Pennsylvania or in Iowa how to raise their livestock or produce food. If those states want to do it, no problem. But regulating outside your borders is still Congress's authority. And so we expect a solution coming quickly to that.
And Kevin Stuckey, sow division manager at Cooper Farms in Ohio, suggested the industry has its challenges, but there's some potential for good things to happen as well.
For the last few years, when the markets haven't been as good and you don't have good production and you don't have good health, that's when things get really, really critical for us. So just being able to maintain healthy animals, safe farms, the labor situation can be tough at times. And thank goodness MPPC really came through for us to get that issue straightened out.
Both Stuckey and Humphrey were interviewed by the AgriPulse News Service. There's a link to the clip
at NorthShoreProductions.com. That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Maggie Dawn.
At 4 o'clock, I'm joined by Matt Rothschild. We go deep on book banning in Florida. Did you read Judy Blume? Did you like it? Well, Florida kids won't be able to read it anymore. We discuss.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Mark Sommerhauser, the communications director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum, analyzing the impacts of the big brutal bill.
That number that you mentioned of nearly $15,000 per person, literally about a quarter of the state's economy.
Basically a quarter of the state's economy coming from the federal government. I'm not hearing from Republicans in the state in their biennial budget planning any sort of contingency plan for major disruption in federal funding coming into the state.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
The soap scientists have found a way to incorporate Sydney Sweeney's actual bathwater into the soap. What if she doesn't smell good? I know she's beautiful.
What if it smells terrible?
What if she stinks? And no one is going to tell her that because she's Sydney Sweeney. Here's an open invitation to Sydney Sweeney. Come by the Nightlight Studios. I'll smell you and let you know if this is a good product.
Maybe drop off, you know.
And give us a few bucks.
Yeah. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News. Mike Dubusky, the suspect accused of staging a deadly attack on Minnesota state lawmakers over the weekend, has now been apprehended. Police say they spotted Vance Bolter on a trail camera last night and that he surrendered peacefully a few hours afterwards. ABC's Faith Bube is in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota with the latest.
Authorities identified the suspect as 57-year-old Vance Bolter. Investigators say they've recovered several firearms from Bolter's vehicle along with No Kings flyers and writings mentioning the names of the victims and some abortion providers along with other Democratic lawmakers. Governor Tim Walz calling the deadly shooting politically motivated.
Bolter allegedly shot and killed former Minnesota House Speaker Melissa Hortman and her husband early Saturday and injured State Senator John Hoffman and his wife during a separate attack. More missile strikes in Israel as Iran continues to retaliate following last week's major Israeli strike on the country's nuclear infrastructure. This is ABC News.